spires of reflective, whitish-silvery material. They seemed to pierce the sky like shining daggers, and Simon realized where he had seen that material before. In the hard, glass-like weapons the Shadow Hunters carried, the ones they called Seraph Blades.
"Those are the Demon Towers," Jay said, in response to Simon's unasked question. "They control the wards that protect the city. Because of them, no demon can enter Alicante."
The air that came in through the window was cold and clean, the sort of air you never breathed in New York City. It tasted of nothing, not dirt or smoke or metal or other people, just air. Simon took a deep, unnecessary breath of it before he turned to look at Jace.
Some human habits died hard. "Tell me," he said, "that bringing me here was an accident. Tell me this wasn't somehow all part of you wanting to stop Clary from coming with you."
Jace didn't look at him, but his chest rose and fell once, quickly, in a sort of suppressed gasp.
"That's right," he said. "I created a bunch of forsaken warriors, had them attack the Institute and kill Madeline, and nearly kill the rest of us just so that I could keep Clary at home. And lo and behold, my diabolical plan is working."
"Well, it is working," Simon said quietly. "Isn't it?"
"Listen, vampire," Jay said. "Keeping Clary from Idris was the plan. Bringing you here was not the plan. I brought you through the portal because if I'd left you behind, bleeding and unconscious, the Forsaken would have killed you."
"You could have stayed behind with me."
"They would have killed us both. I couldn't even tell how many of them there were, not with the Hellmist. Even I can't fight off 100 Forsaken."
"And yet," Simon said, "I bet it pains you to admit that."
"You're an ass," Jay said without inflection, "even for a downworlder. I saved your life and I broke the law to do it. Not for the first time, I might add. You could show a little gratitude."
"Gratitude?" Simon felt his fingers curl in against its palms. "If you hadn't dragged me to the Institute, I wouldn't be here. I never agreed to this."
"You did," said Jace, "when you said you'd do anything for Clary. This is anything."
Before Simon could snap back an angry retort, there was a knock on the door.
"Hello?" Isabel called from the other side.
"Simon, is your diva moment over? I need to talk to Jace."
"Come in, Izzy."
Jace didn't take his eyes off Simon. There was an electric anger in his gaze and a sort of challenge that made Simon long to hit him with something heavy, like a pickup truck. Isabel entered the room in a swirl of black hair and tiered silvery skirts. The ivory corset top she wore left her arms and shoulders, twined with inky runes, bare. Simon supposed it was a nice change of pace for her to be able to show her marks off in a place where no one would think them out of the ordinary.
"Alex going up to the guard," Isabel said without preamble. "He wants to talk to you about Simon before he leaves. Can you come downstairs?"
"Sure."
Jace headed for the door. Halfway there, he realized Simon was following him and turned with a glower.
"You stay here." "No," Simon said. "If you're going to be discussing me, I want to be there for it."
For a moment, it looked as if Jace's icy calm were about to snap. He flushed and opened his mouth, his eyes flashing. Just as quickly, the anger vanished, tamped down by an obvious act of will. He gritted his teeth and smiled.
"Fine," he said. "Come on downstairs, vampire. You can meet the whole happy family."
The first time Clary had gone through a portal, there had been a sense of flying, of weightless tumbling. This time, it was like being thrust into the heart of a tornado. Howling winds tore at her, ripped her hand from Luke's and the scream from her mouth. She fell whirling through the heart of a black and gold maelstrom. Something flat and hard and silvery like the surface of a mirror rose up in front of her. She plunged toward it, shrieking, throwing her hands up to cover her face. She struck the surface and broke through into a world of brutal cold and gasping suffocation. She was sinking through a thick blue darkness, trying to breathe, but she couldn't draw air into her lungs, only more of the freezing coldness. Suddenly, she was seized by the back of her coat and hauled upward. She kicked feebly, but was too weak to break the hold on her. It drew her up, and the indigo darkness around her turned to pale blue and then to gold as she broke the surface of the water. It was water, and sucked in a gasp of air. Or tried to. Instead, she choked and gagged, black spots dotting her vision. She was being dragged through the water, fast, weeds catching and tugging at her legs and arms.
She twisted around in the grip that held her and caught a terrifying glimpse of something. Not quite wolf, and not quite human. Ears as pointed as daggers and lips drawn back from sharp white teeth. She tried to scream, but only water came up. A moment later, she was out of the water and being flung onto damp, hard-packed earth. There were hands on her shoulders, slamming her face down against the ground. The hands struck her back over and over until her chest spasmed and she coughed up a bitter stream of water. She was still choking when the hands rolled her onto her back. She was looking up at Luke, a black shadow against a high blue sky touched with white clouds. The gentleness she was used to seeing in his expression was gone. He was no longer wolf-like, but he looked furious. He hauled her into a sitting position, shaking her hard over and over until she gasped and struck out at him weakly. "Luke, stop it. You're hurting me." His hands left her shoulders. He grabbed her chin in one hand instead, forcing her head up, his eyes searching her face.
"The water," he said. "Did you cough up all the water?"
"I think so," she whispered. Her voice came faintly from her swollen throat.
"Where is your stele?" he demanded. And when she hesitated, his voice sharpened. "Clary, your stele. Find it."
She pulled away from his grasp and rummaged in her wet pockets, her heart sinking as her fingers scrabbled against nothing but damp material. She turned a miserable face up to Luke. "I think I must have dropped it in the lake," she sniffled. My mother's stele."
"Jesus, Clary."
Luke stood up, clasping his hands distractedly behind his head. He was soaking wet, too, water running off his jeans and heavy flannel coat in thick rivulets. The spectacles he usually wore halfway down his nose were gone. He looked down at her somberly.
"You're all right," he said.
It wasn't really a question.
"I mean, right now, you feel all right?"
She nodded. "Luke, what's wrong? Why do we need my stele?" Luke said nothing. He was looking around as if hoping to glean some assistance from their surroundings. Clary followed his gaze. They were on the wide dirt bank of a good-sized lake. The water was pale blue, sparked here and there with reflected sunlight. She wondered if it was the source of the gold light she'd seen through the half-open portal. There was nothing sinister about the lake now that she was next to it instead of in it. It was surrounded by green hills dotted with trees just beginning to turn russet in gold. Beyond the hills rose high mountains, their peaks capped in snow. Clary shivered. "Luke, when we were in the water, did you go part wolf? I thought I saw..."
"My wolf self can swim better than my human self," Luke said shortly. "And it's stronger. I had to drag you through the water, and you weren't offering much help."
"I know," she said. "I'm sorry, you weren't supposed to come with me."
"If I hadn't, you'd be dead now," he pointed out. "Magnus told you, Clary. You can't use a portal to get into the Glass City unless you have someone waiting for you on the other side."
"He said it was against the law. He didn't say if I tried to get there, I'd bounce off."
"He told you there are wards up around the city that prevent portaling into it. It's not his fault you decided to play around with magic you just barely understand. Just because you have power doesn't mean you know how to use it," he scowled.
"I'm sorry," Clary said in a small voice. "It's just... where are we now?"
"Lake Lynn," said Luke. "I think the portal took us as close to the city as it could and then dumped us. We're on the outskirts of Alicante."
He looked around, shaking his head half in amazement and half in weariness.
"You did it, Clary. We're in Idris."
"Idris?" Clary said, and stood staring stupidly out across the lake. It twinkled back at her, blue and undisturbed. "But you said we were on the outskirts of Alicante. I don't see the city anywhere."
"We're miles away," Luke pointed. "You see those hills in the distance? We have to cross over those. The city is on the other side. If we had a car, we could get there in an hour. But we're going to have to walk, which will probably take all afternoon." He squinted up at the sky. "We'd better get going."
Clary looked down at herself in dismay. The prospect of a day-long hike and soaking wet clothes did not appeal. "Isn't there anything else?"
"Anything else we can do?" Luke said, and there was a sharp edge of anger to his voice. "Do you have any suggestions, Clary, since you're the one who brought us here?"
He pointed away from the lake.
"That way lie mountains, passable on foot only in high summer. We'd freeze to death on the peaks."
He turned, stabbed his finger in another direction. That way lie miles of woods. They run all the way to the border. They're uninhabited, at least by human beings. Past Alicante, there's farmland and country houses. Maybe we could get out of Idris, but we'd still have to pass through the city. A city, I may add, where downworlders like myself are hardly welcome. Clary looked at him with her mouth open.
Luke, I didn't know.
Of course you didn't know. You don't know anything about Idris. You don't even care about Idris. You were just upset about being left behind, like a child, and you had a tantrum. And now we're here, lost and freezing and...
He broke off, his face tight.
Come on, let's start walking.
Clary followed Luke along the edge of Lake Lynn in a miserable silence. As they walked, the sun dried her hair and skin, but the velvet coat held water like a sponge. It hung on her like a lead curtain as she tripped hastily over rocks and mud, trying to keep up with Luke's long-legged stride. She made a few further attempts at conversation, but Luke remained stubbornly silent. She'd never done anything so bad before that an apology hadn't softened Luke's anger. This time, it seemed, was different. The cliffs rose higher around the lakes as they progressed, pocked with spots of darkness, like splashes of black paint. As Clary looked more closely, she realized they were caves in the rock. Some looked like they went very deep, twisting away into darkness. She imagined bats and creepy crawling things hiding in the blackness and shivered. At last, a narrow path cutting through the cliffs led them to a wide road lined with crushed stones. The lake curved away behind them, indigo, in the late afternoon sunlight. The road cut through a flat, grassy plain that rose to rolling hills in the distance. Clary's heart sank. The city was nowhere in sight. Luke was staring toward the hills with a look of intense dismay on his face.
We're farther than I thought. It's been such a long time.
Maybe if we found a bigger road, Clary suggested, we could hitchhike or get a ride to the city or...
Clary, there are no cars in Idris.
Seeing her shocked expression, Luke laughed without much amusement.
The wards foul up the machinery. Most technology doesn't work here. Mobile phones, computers, the like. Alicante itself is lit and powered mostly by witchlight.
Oh, Clary said in a small voice. Well, about how far from the city are we?
Far enough.
Without looking at her, Luke raked both his hands back through his short hair.
There's something I better tell you.
Clary tensed. All she'd wanted before was for Luke to talk to her. Now she didn't want it anymore. It's all right.
Did you notice, Luke said, that there weren't any boats on Lake Lynn? No docks. Nothing that might suggest the lake is used in any way by the people of Idris.
I just thought that was because it was so remote.
It's not that remote. A few hours from Alicante on foot. The fact is, the lake...
Luke broke off and sighed.
Did you ever notice the pattern on the library floor at the Institute in New York?
Clary blinked. I did, but I couldn't figure out what it was.
It was an angel rising out of a lake holding a cup and a sword. It's a repeating motif in Nephilim decorations. The legend is that the angel Raziel rose out of Lake Lynn when he first appeared to Jonathan Shadowhunter, the first of the Nephilim, and gave him the mortal instruments. Ever since then, the lake has been...
Sacred? Clary suggested.
Cursed, Luke said. The water of the lake is in some way poisonous to Shadowhunters. It won't hurt downworlders. The fair folk call it the Mirror of Dreams, and they drink its water because they claim it gives them true visions. But for a Shadowhunter to drink the water is very dangerous. It causes hallucinations, fever. It can drive a person to madness.
Clary felt cold all over. That's why you tried to make me spit the water out.
Luke nodded. And why I wanted you to find your stele. With a healing rune, we could stave off the water's effects. Without it, we need to get you to Alicante as quickly as possible. There are medicines, herbs that will help, and I know someone who will almost certainly have them.
The Lightwoods?
Not the Lightwoods.
Luke's voice was firm.
Someone else. Someone I know.
Who?
He shook his head. Let's just pray this person hasn't moved away in the last 15 years.
But I thought you said it was against the law for downworlders to come into Alicante without permission.
His answering smile was a reminder of the Luke who had caught her when she'd fallen off the jungle gym as a child. The Luke who had always protected her.
Some laws are meant to be broken.
The Penhallows' house reminded Simon of the Institute. It had that same sense of belonging somehow to another era. The halls and stairways were narrow, made of stone and dark wood, and the windows were tall and thin, giving out onto views of the city. There was a distinctly Asian feel to the decorations. A shoji screen stood on the first floor landing, and there were lacquer-flowered, tall Chinese vases on the windowsills. There were also a number of silk screen prints on the walls, showing what must have been scenes from Shadow Hunter mythology, but with an Eastern feel to them. Warlords wielding glowing seraph blades were prominently featured, alongside colorful dragon-like creatures and slithering pop-eyed demons. Mrs. Penhallow, Gia, used to run the Beijing Institute. She splits her time between here and the Forbidden City, Isabel said as Simon paused to examine a print. And the Penhallows are an old family, wealthy.
I can tell, Simon muttered, looking up at the chandeliers dripping cut glass crystals like teardrops.
Jace on the step behind them grunted. Move it along. We're not taking a historical tour here.
Simon weighed a rude retort and decided it wasn't worth bothering. He took the rest of the stairs at a rapid pace. They opened out at the bottom into a large room. It was an odd mixture of the old and the new. A glass picture window looked out onto the canal, and there was music playing from a stereo that Simon couldn't see. But there was no television, no stack of DVDs or CDs, the sort of detritus Simon associated with modern living rooms. Instead, there were a number of overstuffed couches grouped around a large fireplace in which flames were crackling. Alex stood by the fireplace in dark Shadow Hunter gear, drawing on a pair of gloves. He looked up as Simon entered the room and scowled his habitual scowl, but said nothing. Seated on the couches were two teenagers Simon had never seen before, a boy and a girl. The girl looked as if she were partly Asian, with delicate almond-shaped eyes, glossy dark hair pulled back from her face, and a mischievous expression. Her delicate chin narrowed into a point like a cat's. She wasn't exactly pretty, but she was very striking. The black-haired boy beside her was more than striking. He was probably Jace's height, but seemed taller even sitting down. He was slender and muscular, with a pale, elegant, restless face, all cheekbones and dark eyes. There was something strangely familiar about him, as if Simon had met him before. The girl spoke first. Is that the vampire? She looked Simon up and down as if she were taking his measurements. I've never really been this close to a vampire before. Not one I wasn't planning to kill, at least. She cocked her head to the side. He's cute. For a downworlder.
You'll have to forgive her. She has the face of an angel and the manners of a Moloch demon, said the boy with a smile, getting to his feet. He held out his hand to Simon. I'm Sebastian. Sebastian Verloc. And this is my cousin, Aline Penhallow. Aline?
I don't shake hands with downworlders, Aline said, shrinking back against the couch cushions. They don't have souls, you know. Vampires.
Sebastian's smile disappeared. Aline.
It's true. That's why they can't see themselves in mirrors or go in the sun.
Very deliberately, Simon stepped backward into the patch of sunlight in front of the window. He felt the sun hot on his back, his hair. His shadow was cast long and dark across the floor, almost reaching Jace's feet. Aline took a sharp breath but said nothing. It was Sebastian who spoke, looking at Simon with curious black eyes.
So it's true. The Lightwood said, but I didn't think that we were telling the truth, Jace said, speaking for the first time since they'd come downstairs. We wouldn't lie about something like this. Simon's unique.
I kissed him once, Isabel said to no one in particular.
Aline's eyebrows shot up. They really do let you do whatever you want in New York, don't they? She said, sounding half horrified and half envious. The last time I saw you, Izzy, you wouldn't even have considered.
The last time we all saw each other, Izzy was 8, Alex said. Things change. Now, Mom had to leave here in a hurry, so someone has to take her notes and records up to the guard for her. I'm the only one who's 18, so I'm the only one who can go while the Clave's in session.
We know, Isabel said, flopping down onto a couch. You've already told us that, like, 5 times.
Alec, who was looking important, ignored this.
Jace, you brought the vampire here, so you're in charge of him. Don't let him go outside.
The vampire, Simon thought. It wasn't like Alec didn't know his name. He'd saved Alec's life once. Now he was the vampire. Even for Alec, who was prone to the occasional fit of inexplicable sullenness, this was obnoxious. Maybe it had something to do with being an Idris. Maybe Alec felt a greater need to assert his shadow hunterness here.
That's what you brought me down here to tell me? Don't let the vampire go outside?
I wouldn't have done that anyway. Jay slid onto the couch beside Aline, who looked pleased.
You better hurry up to the garden back. God knows what depravity we might get up to here without your guidance.
Alec gazed at Jace with calm superiority. Try to hold it together. I'll be back in half an hour. He vanished through an archway that led to a long corridor. Somewhere in the distance, a door clicked shut.
You shouldn't bait him, Isabel said, shooting Jace a severe look. They did leave him in charge.
Aline, Simon couldn't help but notice, was sitting very close to Jace, their shoulders touching, even though there was plenty of room around them on the couch.
Did you ever think that in a past life, Alec was an old woman with 90 cats who was always yelling at the neighborhood kids to get off her lawn? Because I do, he said.
And Aline giggled.
Just because he's the only one who can go to the guard. What's the guard?
Simon asked, tired of having no idea what anyone was talking about. Jace looked at him. His expression was cool, unfriendly. His hand was atop Aline's, where it rested on her thigh.
Sit down, he said, jerking his head toward an armchair. Or did you plan to hover in the corner like a bat? Great. Bat jokes.
Simon settled himself uncomfortably in the chair.
The guard is the official meeting place of the Clave, Sebastian said, apparently taking pity on Simon. It's where the law is made, and where the Consul and Inquisitor reside. Only adult shadow hunters are allowed onto its grounds when the Clave is in session.
In session? Simon asked, remembering what Jace had said earlier upstairs.
You mean, not because of me?
Sebastian laughed.
No. Because of Valentine and the mortal instruments. That's why everyone's here. To discuss what Valentine's going to do next.
Jace said nothing, but at the sound of Valentine's name, his face tightened.
Well, he'll go after the mirror, Simon said. The third of the mortal instruments, right? Is it here in Idris? Is that why everyone's here?
There was a short silence before Isabel answered. The thing about the mirror is that no one knows where it is. In fact, no one knows what it is.
It's a mirror, said Simon. You know, reflective glass? I'm just assuming. What Isabel means, said Sebastian kindly, is that nobody knows anything about the mirror. There are multiple mentions of it in the Shadowhunter histories, but no specifics about where it is, what it looks like, or, most important, what it does.
We assume Valentine wants it, said Isabel, but that doesn't help much since no one's got a clue where it is. The Silent Brothers might have had an idea, but Valentine killed them all. There won't be more for at least a little while.
All of them? Simon demanded in surprise. I thought he only killed the ones in New York.
The Bone City isn't really in New York, Isabel said. It's like, remember the entrance to the Seelie Court in Central Park? Just because the entrance was there doesn't mean the court itself is under the park. It's the same with the Bone City. There are various entrances, but the city itself...
Isabel broke off as Aline shushed her with a quick gesture. Simon looked from her face to Jace's, to Sebastian's. They all had the same guarded expression, as if they'd just realized what they'd been doing, telling Nephilim secrets to a downworlder, a vampire. Not the enemy, precisely, but certainly someone who couldn't be trusted. Aline was the first one to break the silence. Fixing her pretty dark gaze on Simon, she said, So, what's it like being a vampire?
Aline? Isabel looked appalled. You can't just go around asking people what it's like to be a vampire.
I don't see why, Aline said. He hasn't been a vampire that long, has he? So he must remember what it was like being a person. She turned back to Simon. Does blood still taste like blood to you, or does it taste like something else now, like orange juice or something? Because I would think the taste of blood would...
It tastes like chicken, Simon said, just to shut her up.
Really? Aline looked astonished.
He's making fun of you, Aline, said Sebastian, as well he should. I apologize for my cousin again, Simon. Those of us who are brought up outside Idris tend to have a little more familiarity with downworlders.
But weren't you brought up in Idris? Isabel asked. I thought your parents...
Isabel, Jace interrupted, but it was already too late.
Sebastian's expression darkened.
My parents are dead, he said. A demon nest near Calais. It's all right. It was a long time ago.
He waved away Isabel's protestation of sympathy.
My aunt, Aline's father's sister, brought me up at the Institute in Paris.
So you speak French? Isabel sighed. I wish I spoke another language. But Hodge never thought we needed to learn anything but ancient Greek and Latin, and nobody speaks those.
I also speak Russian and Italian, and some Romanian, Sebastian said with a modest smile. I could teach you some phrases. Romanian, that's impressive, said Jace. Not many people speak it. Do you? Sebastian asked with interest. Not really, Jace said with a smile so disarming Simon knew he was lying. My Romanian is pretty much limited to useful phrases, like, are these snakes poisonous, and, but you look much too young to be a police officer.
Sebastian didn't smile. There was something about his expression, Simon thought. It was mild. Everything about him was calm. But Simon had the sense that the mildness hid something beneath it that belied his outward tranquility.
I do like traveling, he said, his eyes on Jace. But it's good to be back, isn't it?
Jace paused in the act of playing with Aline's fingers.
What do you mean? Just that there's nowhere else quite like Idris. However much we Nephilim might make homes for ourselves elsewhere. Don't you agree? Why are you asking me?
Jace's look was icy.
Sebastian shrugged. Well, you lived here as a child, didn't you? And it's been years since you've been back. Or did I get that wrong?
You didn't get it wrong, Isabel said impatiently. Jace likes to pretend that everyone isn't talking about him, even when he knows they are.
They certainly are.
Though Jace was glaring at him, Sebastian seemed unruffled. Simon felt a sort of half-reluctant liking for the dark-haired shadow hunter boy. It was rare to find someone who didn't react to Jace's taunts.
These days in Idris, it's all anyone talks about. You, the mortal instruments, your father, your sister.
Clarissa was supposed to come with you, wasn't she? Aline said. I was looking forward to meeting her. What happened? Though Jace's expression didn't change, he drew his hand back from Aline's, curling it into a fist.
She didn't want to leave New York. Her mother's ill in the hospital.
He never says our mother, Simon thought. It's always her mother. It's weird, Isabel said. I really thought she wanted to come.
She did, said Simon. In fact...
Jace was on his feet so fast that Simon didn't even see him move.
Come to think of it, I have something I need to discuss with Simon, in private.
He jerked his head toward the double doors at the far end of the room, his eyes glittering a challenge.
Come on, vampire, he said in a tone that left Simon with a distinct feeling that a refusal would probably end in some kind of violence. Let's talk.
Chapter 3. Amatus. By late afternoon, Luke and Clary had left the lake far behind and were pacing over seemingly endless, broad, flat swatches of high grass. Here and there a gentle rise reared up into a high hill topped with black rocks. Clary was exhausted from staggering up and down the hills one after another, her boots slipping on the damp grass as if it were greased marble. By the time they left the fields behind for a narrow dirt road, her hands were bleeding and grass-stained. Luke stalked ahead of her with determined strides. Occasionally, he would point out items of interest in a somber voice, like the world's most depressed tour guide.
We just crossed Rosslyn Plain, he said as they climbed a rise and saw a tangled expanse of dark trees stretching away toward the west, where the sun hung low in the sky. This is the forest. The woods used to cover most of the lowland of the country. Much of it was cut down to make way for the city, and to clear out the wolf packs and vampire nests that tended to crop up there. Brosselin Forest has always been a hiding place for downworlders.
They trudged along in silence as the road curved alongside the forest for several miles before taking an abrupt turn. The trees seemed to lift away as a ridge rose above them, and Clary blinked when they turned the corner of a high hill. Unless her eyes were deceiving her, there were houses down there. small white rows of houses, orderly as a munchkin village. "We're here!" she exclaimed and darted forward, only stopping when she realized that Luke was no longer beside her.